I'm Tom Evans and welcome to The Zone Show, where we explore how having a healthy mind leads to having a healthy body. So today we're going to be exploring the healing zone, and I've been looking forward to this conversation for quite a few weeks now. I've been reading a book called Radiant Survivor, How to Shine and Thrive Through Recovery from Stroke, Cancer, Abuse, Addiction, and Other Life-Altering Experiences by an author called Erica Tucci. Now, I've first got to say, Erica, what a stunning cover. If ever a cover said what the book's all about, I don't know. I don't think I've ever seen one quite so perfect. So well done on that. But and hi, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
I'm great. So listen, this is the story not just of your brush with illness, but also lots of other people. And June the 10th, 2011, 6:30, that's when you had your stroke.
Yeah, that's a glorious day that changed my life completely.
And I've got to ask, how are you now?
Well, I'm still in recovery. I'm on my last leg of recovery. And actually, it's been the biggest challenge, the last part of my recovery. Because up until April, I was doing really great in rehab and everything else. And then all of a sudden, my body took I'm going to call it a downturn. But I really think that what happened was Spirit was telling me, Erica, you're still operating in your old mindset. You have to change the way you think. Because I'm a person that is I used to be a very controlling person. I used to operate out of my masculine side, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a story about my stroke that's behind that, which I can talk about in a minute. But I was really, really working hard at everything, and everything seemed to be going really well. And then my body just shut down. I could not do a thing. I mean, I couldn't even walk in the house anymore. So it was very, very strange, and I've been that way since. But what I think it's all about is that I'm shifting from the more masculine, controlling mindset to the more surrendering, feminine, nurturing mindset, where I have to completely surrender, completely let go. And there's a plaque that my massage therapist has above his massage table that says, "The power that created our body can heal our body." And it's very, very true. What I'm having to do is surrender to the power of the higher power, our, you know, God, the creator, universe, spirit, however you define the higher power, and let them do the work. And it's very, very hard when you have been somebody that's always controlled your life. So that's what I've been going through for the past several months. And it really is difficult because I'm not able to exercise like I used to. I just kind of have to sit back and let it go, let it happen. Just go with the flow.
And do you feel you're on the right path now?
Yes, very much. Really, yeah. I mean, like I said, it is a struggle, and I can't say whether I have made that full transition yet, or but I think I really am on the right path. Yes.
Oh, that's good to hear. So we go back to that day, June 10th, 2011. What happened? I mean, what's it like to have a stroke? Did you know you're having a stroke?
Oh, gosh, no. I mean, it was one of those things that it just happened. I was standing in my living room, on my living room floor, getting ready to go to work. I had my purse on my left side with my phone in it, which is the fortunate thing. And I just collapsed. And I did a belly flop. And I could not, for the life of me, figure out what was going on. So I kept trying to get up. And I couldn't because my one side wasn't working. So I turned over on my back and I said, "My gosh, what's going on?" And so I, my son, who was 19 years old at the time, he was in his room about 10 feet away, but I couldn't call out to him because my voice was so weak. So I called my mom. Fortunately, like I said, I had my phone in my purse, and my left side was still operable, so I was able to get the phone out of my purse. I called mom and I said, "Mom, I don't know what's going on." Very slurred words. And she was just panicked, of course. I said, call Brett, my son, and please tell him to come out and help." So he comes running out of his room, says, "Mom, my God." He immediately called the ambulance. They came almost immediately. And I was very fortunate because there's a medication called TPA. It's a clot blaster. They immediately got me to the hospital. They administered that medicine. And that's when my journey started.
Gotcha. So obviously, speed is of importance if we see someone suffering from a stroke, isn't it?
With a stroke, yes, very, very much so. Yeah, I mean, if you can, I think I read that 80% of strokes can actually be prevented. If you know how to recognize the stroke itself, you can actually do a lot to prevent the really, really bad effects of a stroke, which was what happened to me. Because I could have had the kind of stroke I had, the ER doctor in the hospital told my mom that my stroke was very, very profound, and I could have had really, really bad things happen. Cognitive problems, vision problems, walking problems, writing problems, eating problems, swallowing problems, everything. But because I had that medication administered, which is only for an ischemic throat, a stroke, if you've had a blood clot, that's caused your stroke.
And what is an ischemic stroke exactly?
It's caused by a blood clot.
And what part of the brain? Obviously, if your right side was affected, does that mean that the left side of the brain,
Yes, it is. And that's something I wanted to point out. The right side of, the left side of the brain is the more analytical organi or the brain that concentrates on analysis, organization, things like that.
Sure.
Well, it affects the right side of the body. So in a sense, the right side of the body is the masculine side because it's affected by the left side of the brain. And my masculine side was the side that was affected in me. And that's why I said I've always operated at my masculine side. So it makes perfect sense that my masculine side was decommissioned. Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense. And you were working in a Fortune 500 company at the time, is that right?
Well, I was, yes, I was. I was working for a large company and I was a corporate manager. Plus, I had a healing business and I was a Reiki master, life coach, massage therapist, author. So I had a lot going. But that's not really, it was, I loved my job. I loved everything I was doing. I was working 80 hours a week, which is really stupid. But that's not really what caused my stroke. My stroke was caused because I had a hole in my heart, which 25% of us still have, even though we're born with it and it should close when we're an infant. 25% of us have a hole in our heart, and most of the time, you don't find out about it until something like this happens.
Would that not be a good thing for people to test sort of early on with?
Yes, it is, but I doctors and insurance companies, they wouldn't get their money from the doc, the patient if they did that, because that's preventative medicine, and so many doctors really want, they want to wait until you have something happen so that they can. Well, I'm not going to get into that pulpit. Yes, it would be much better, and I think that. See, I had flutters in my heart. I've had flutters in my heart a lot in my lifetime. And this goes back to my past life, and I can talk about that too later.
Well, let's talk about past lives now. Anything goes on the Zone Show. Let's talk about one of the zones that we explore often is the time zone and how time isn't exactly what we think it might be. And when I went up on a past life regression course a few years ago, I started to see people's past lives in their auras. So I know that the now is an illusion, a very pervasive illusion, and we can do all sorts of things, especially if you're a Reiki master, healing the past to heal the present and that sort of stuff. So let's dive into the time zone and talk about past life regression.
Okay, two years before I had my stroke. Okay, I had my stroke in 2011. 2009, I went to a past life regression therapist. And the past life that I had was in 1897, Charleston, South Carolina. And at that point, I saw a woman. She was, at the very end of the past life regression, she was a showgirl on stage. And of course, it was me that I was watching. And she had a gaping hole in her heart where her heart was, a gaping hole. Now, I think it was a symbolic hole.
Wow.
And now the whole past life was really caused by love, because when I was when that person was about 12 years old, she was actually a little girl working in a saloon, selling, not selling because she was too young, but she was cleaning tables and things like that. And there was a young lad that she really liked. But he was of an upper class, and they really liked one another. But because of the classes, of course, they couldn't get together. So then she was a showgirl, and a very well-known showgirl, and she was on stage performing. And this man came in to that performance, but with a woman on his arm from his class. Okay, so you, I mean, she was also obviously heartbroken, and that's probably why I saw a gaping hole in her heart. Well, fast forward to two years in 2011, I had a stroke, and it was caused by a physical hole in my heart. So if I had heeded the warning from my past life, and the flutters that I had had throughout my life, I may have been able to avoid that my stroke, you know. But then I think, okay, but is that really what my karma was all about? That I should have not had this stroke? So I mean, it's all kind of, you know, it's all tied together on, you know, how your life. Yeah, it's a fascinating story. In fact, that man of that past life is in my life now.
Now that's even more fascinating then.
Oh, I know, and it's all in the book, you know, but the thing about it is that we were not able to, not at the time when I met him, to 3 4 years before I had my stroke, because he was married. So it's the same thing. It was about love, and there was an obstacle that did not allow us to get together. So I wasn't able to get together in that other life, and I wasn't able to get together in this life. However, now I have been told, he told me that he's no longer married. So my feeling is that we are going to reconnect once everything is settled. I'm recovered and everything. And he has to go through his own grief because he's no longer married. He's having to go through the grief of the breakup of his family. So, you know, once we both go through our grief, I do believe that we are supposed to reconnect because there is a very, very strong bond between us. So it's a very fascinating how my story, so all of these different components of my past life and this life are all tied together to my stroke.
That's fascinating, Erica, because you talk about in the book about knowing your life trauma before birth,
Yes.
and that we have this kind of sacred contract with five stages. Could you share those with us?
Sure. First, you make a connection with the divine in some way. It could be either or ordinary or extraordinary circumstances, such as through dreams, meditation, or some serendipitous event, such as a stroke. Once you've made this connection, then it's up to you to take action on this experience that's awakened you. And you usually see life from a different perspective. And yes, I do see life from a very, very different perspective. Then, by embarking on your path, you may take on a new name. Some people like to take on a different name or a different role. Oh, now, that's not something that I really feel like doing. That may have some more spiritual meaning. You may create a sacred space in your home. Now, that I do. Start meditating. You create a spiritual community. Work with spiritual teachers, etc. And then you'll be faced with challenges that are, you know, opportunities to help you continue down your path of growth. Then you have to surrender, and that's what I'm doing right now. You'll have to surrender to the will of the divine, which will push you further and further down the path of your spiritual development. And that's exactly what I'm going through right now.
Okay, so after the stroke, obviously you go through this process of recovery, and you're obviously familiar with the idea of neuroplasticity, that our brain can rewire. I'd just be interested to know how you feel about the fact, obviously you do lots of therapy, sort of allopathic therapy with the medical profession, where they help you get your motor function back and your speech back and all that kind of stuff. What do you think happens then as the brain rewires? Does that allow the new Erica to blossom as well at the same time?
Well, I think so. I think it goes hand in hand. You know, you can't really discount the allopathic medicine, but I think that all the alternative kinds of medicines and things, all those things allow, you know, a person to change on the physical level and on the spiritual level. Now, to me, when you're really doing the work underneath the work with the divine, I believe that when you do that work first, everything else manifests physically. So if you just work only on your outer reality, I don't think that you will blossom to really who your really real authentic self is. You've got to go and really, really dig very, very deep into your psyche and to work at that spiritual level to really come to who you really, really are. You know, I think that there's, and I think that most of us concentrate more on our outer reality than we do on our inner reality. And I think, I don't want to say most, because I don't know most people in the world, but I'm going to say, but you know, there are a lot of people out in the world that really focus more on vanity instead of who they really, really are inside, because that to me is more of who you are and who you really want to be. And if you have that connection with your inner divinity, then you can radiate that self-love and that authentic self out into the world, and you can help others. And that's what I'm hoping to do, you know, with my book and with the experiences that I've had in life. I want to take what I've learned and try to help other people, you know, go down their path on their own personal evolution.
Yeah, because you talk about gratitude and attitude in the book, and obviously a lot of people that might be in your situation could be thinking, woe is me, and oh poor me, and
yes,
or the system did this to me by you know, giving me McDonald's or making me smoke or making me drink these fizzy drinks or something like that. But it sounds like the stroke has brought you such gifts as well.
It really has. And the thing about it is, you know, why not change that why me, oh poor little old me, why me, into why not me? You know, why not? You know, why, you know, this is something that, this is a life lesson to me. What is it that I can learn from this? Mm. What is it that I can bring out into the world? How can I help other people? Like I said, I was in a very masculine, ego-based, domineering, controlling kind of lifestyle. Even though I was doing work with women, you know, trying to help them find their yin radiance, but it was more from a, what's in it for me mindset. And that what the stroke has done for me is it's changing me to feel more nurturing, more feminine, more authentic from my soul, from my heart, you know, I feel like I'm more heart centered. So now I can say, okay, what I've gone through, I know, you know, it's been very, very challenging. And I know there are a lot of people out there, but, you know, really and truly, almost everybody faces some kind of trauma in their life. And it doesn't have to be big or small. It can be a very, very small thing in their life. But now I feel like, okay, how can I help people get through their own traumas and stuff based on my own experience with my challenge in life?
Well, on a very practical level, this concept of a hole in the heart, you know, and maybe it has got past life resonance, but talking very practically, is there a simple test for that that people could have done? And
there is.
And just want to know, did you have yours fixed?
Oh yes, I had mine fixed. Last year I had it. It's long, been a long time. It was in 2012, sometime last year. I can't remember, October, sometime a long time that I did have it repaired. And it was a kind of a fun procedure. I'll tell you about it in a minute. But yes, people can. There is a test, and they did run that test. That's of course how they found out about the hole. It's not a fun test, but you're asleep when they do it. They put a something down your I think it's called a transducer. They put down your throat so that they can see your heart and everything, and it uses sound waves, I think, is how it works. But they find out how your heart is working and everything, if there is a hole. The thing is, like I said, that's a kind of a preventive thing, and it's an expensive, I'm sure it's an expensive, a test. But I think that anybody that has things happening to their heart, if they have any sort of indications that they may have any kind of heart problem, for example, I had a lot of flutters, you know, through my life. If I had had that checked out, maybe I could have avoided my stroke. So yes, there is a test available for that deficit, I guess, in your heart.
So obviously, you know, you did have the stroke, and you come through it, and you've done some amazing things since then. Well, you've written a book for starters, which is just amazing. And how much do you think writing that book has been part of the healing process?
Big time, because every time that I had some kind of subject that would come up, some topic or something that some issue that I had to work on myself as I was recovering from my stroke, that's what I'd write about.
Mm.
You know, I'd write a story, I'd write a chapter, and then I would, because I solicited a lot of people's other stories, you know, I've got cancer in there, I've got abuse, sexual abuse, I've got anxieties, addiction, MS, CFS, which is chronic fatigue syndrome. There's a one about a woman, fascinating woman, that doesn't have any arms. She does everything with her feet, including sewing and writing. I mean, she's shown me her videos of how she writes and sews, threading a needle with your toes. I mean, absolutely fascinating. She's in there. I had another stroke patient, survivor. And, you know, there's a lot of different stories. So as I had the topic that I wanted to write the chapter on, then I'd write, you know, for myself, and then I would include a story that was very appropriate for that chapter. I would use that story in the chapter.
And that's, I must admit, that to me was very endearing in the book, because a lot of books of this kind of nature, they tend to be very insular, and the author talks about them and their journey and this sort of stuff. But you know, you talk about the stroke for sure, but you don't keep going on about it. And the other stories are equally enthralling. Which would your favorite be? Which would the most inspiring be?
I can't really say, because a lot of them, I really can't. I mean, not that I can't. They're all so fascinating. They're all different in the sense that everybody had their own way of surviving and thriving in their lives. Now, you know, I really like the story that in the chapter, What If I Don't Recover? And I do like that one, but she's also a stroke survivor. But what I think I like about it was that she did not completely recover. She's still in a wheelchair 20 years after her stroke, and I think she got her stroke affected her left side. She showed me, because I've talked to her on Skype, you know, we talked via video, and she showed me her arm. It's still paralyzed. She's still in a wheelchair, and yet she has swum with the dolphins. She's traveled to Singapore. She's got a foundation that she started, an organization, you know, helping other people who are disabled. You know, she's had awards and stuff. She's won awards. So she's really done a lot with her life in spite of her condition. And to me, that's very, very inspiring. But, you know, like I said, all the stories are very inspiring to me.
Absolutely. Well, actually, I'd love to interview her. If you could connect us, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah, she lives there in the UK.
Oh, is that right? Fantastic. Even better.
Because of Facebook, I've got stories from all over Australia. Most of them are in UK. I feel like I need to move to UK because I've got so many people that I've met in the UK, you know, because of Facebook and my book and everything else, that I think I need to move over there.
You'll be more than welcome. And there's plenty of places I know where you can come and do talks and book signings if you make it across the pond.
Well, I plan on coming anyway. That's one of the things I do hope to do, travel a lot. When I get completely recovered, where I can actually, you know, move around better, I plan on traveling a lot. And I want to do speaking engagements and stuff. That's all part of what I'd love to do in the future. But I want to live in the moment right now and focus on my healing and my book and everything.
And, you know, you talk a lot about the yin and yang balance and the idea that the left side of the brain is this analytical side of the brain, and maybe the life lesson for you was the idea that that side needed to take a back seat so the other side could come back in. How important do you think it is not that we sort of switch from just masculine to feminine, that we actually move to a position of balance?
Well, because we all have the masculine and the feminine mm-hmm. aspects, you know, in our psyche, obviously physically, you know, and in every way. And we can't just operate from one side or the other, because at one point, you know, like if you're having to deal with discipline or organization or analysis of something, or, you know, drive or whatever, those are all masculine traits and you need to use your masculine side. But if you're trying to nurture your family or a loved one or a relationship or, you know, your colleague, or one of your subordinates or whatever, you're going to want to use your feminine side. So you need to have that unity. So what my real ultimate goal is to have my feminine side emerge and develop, that's what's going on. And then I want to be able to be in union. You know, I want to have that unity between the masculine and the feminine. I think that we all are a microcosm of our huge world. which is also masculine and feminine. I mean, that's the way it is everywhere. And I think that this is my own belief, that our world actually is in the way that it is because it's been male dominated for too long. And male, you know, they want war and there's power and greed and everything's ego-based. And I think the negative masculine energy has caused a lot of that in our world. And I think that we're shifting now. This big transformation that's going on in the world is shifting now more to the feminine. And then once we get that, once the pendulum swings, you know, out to the side, the feminine side, then it will come into the center and we will be more balanced.
Gosh, and you talk about how non-surrender kind of hardens the ego, the shell of the ego, and creates the separateness. So the opposite of that, I guess, then is the surrender, isn't it, to the process and to the learnings?
Yes. When you surrender to God, spirit, or whatever, you're really surrendering to your own inner divinity, because you are part of that higher power. You have your higher self, which is connected to the source of everything. And when you do that, then you know that is a real strong, powerful way to be, you know, because then you're kind of bringing that feminine power out into the world, which we need right now so much.
And you talk about this concept of God, and obviously in our secular times, I'm not quite sure how things are in the States, but over in the UK, you know, fewer and fewer people go to church and believe in a religion. Therefore, God has kind of taken a back seat. So in this 21st century, where we've got all our science and all our wonder and this technology we're using, how can we let God in into our lives again, but maybe maintain that secularity if that's precious to us?
Well, I think there are a lot of techniques, but really, first thing is you've got to want to. You don't want to connect with your own inner being, your inner source of creation, then it's not going to happen, you know. There seems to be a big, big upsurge of people moving more and more towards that connection with their inner source. I call it the inner divinity. Through meditation, through past life regression, through, you know, all the different kind of modalities, even, you know, massage, the Reiki, all the energy work that's going on right now. I think a lot of people that do all this stuff, the work, you know, that you do as a mystic, all that stuff that's going on, I think there are more and more people that are really actually coming more into their own authentic self. And as they do that, they're kind of bringing things more into unity in the world.
Oh, wonderful. Now, I actually, you just reminded me of something someone taught me some time ago, what ego stands for, which is edging God out.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, I think that is a very, and I associate it, you know, masculine and feminine, because that's the way it is for me. People can say that's the light versus the dark, you know, evil versus the good, whatever you want to say. But it's the opposite. It's polar. And the masculine, in my eyes, the ego, it's focused on the outer reality, whereas the more feminine side is focused more on the inner reality. And when you can get both of them working together, you know there's that's really wonderful, actually, you know, for the world. We got that balance. Maybe we'll be able to get rid of a lot of the hard horrors that are going on in the world that I think are very male based, ego based, I want to say, power, that greed, because of focusing more again on the material, focusing things on what's tangible, you know, focusing on things, not on people.
And in terms of balance, you also talk a lot about the support you've had. And, you know, you did that 3.5 mile run, and you got a whole chapter on the caregiver. And obviously nowadays what happens is people don't necessarily see that the caregiver's giving so much and also might be in need of some succor and sustenance. And how much do you think of your journey is kind of shared with the caregivers, and the caregivers are kind of learning at the same time.
Oh gosh, I think that the caregivers are affected just as much as the survivor. My mom, well, my mom has a story, you know, a special story, but my mom, she was affected more by my stroke than I was emotionally, but that's because of her background. She started caregiving at 8 years old. Her whole life has been about caregiving. And so, you know, the caregivers their whole life changes when they have to take care of somebody that's been affected by some kind of traumatic experience.
Mm-hmm.
Their whole life completely changes, just like the survivor. So I think that they have a process that they have to go through too in order to be able to support the person, their charge, you know, and it's not an easy task. That's why I had to dedicate a chapter to the caregivers. I had stories in that, you know, in that chapter, several stories of, you know, caregivers and their feelings about what it's like to be a caregiver.
Yeah, and you know, I had to delay this interview by now because that's the role I was playing today, as you well know.
That's right.
But it's kind of interesting then. So, you know, you talk about having this, knowing your life trauma before birth. Then perhaps the caregiver is also working out or working through some kind of karma as well.
I think everybody has karma, you know, because I do believe in, you know, multiple lives. I think from life to life, we carry over our karma from the lives before. For example, like mine, you know, the hole in my heart, the love, all that stuff, I carried it over to this life. People that may have been very, very bad in some way in a past life, maybe things are going to be very bad in another future life because of what they did to other people in a past life are going to happen to them because, you know, what goes around comes around. I mean, really, eventually. And it doesn't have to all happen in one life. You know, whatever you did in one life, you're going to have to pay for it sometime in the future.
Oh, actually, your book is a very caring book, and in some ways you're giving care and giving real practical advice to people, not in just in terms of stroke and how you might be able to avoid one in the first place, but also how to go through those stages of recovery. And I like the fact that you describe recovery as a process, and again with these five stages.
Denial, I think it was bargaining, anger. Eventually you come to acceptance, you know, that you...
Yeah.
Now, it's funny because when I look back at the time that when I had the stroke, I think my denial was more kind of a state of total bliss or total ignorance. Because when I first had my stroke, I didn't think, oh my gosh, my life has completely changed. I'm not going to be able to do what I used to do and everything. I just kind of go around the hallways and talk to the nurses and talk to the other patients. And, you know, the nurses would come in like every single night, having blood and everything. I just kind of went with the flow of what was going on. And it really didn't hit me because depression is one of the other phases that you go through. But I did go through that. But I don't know if I really... I guess that was my way of denying things, was kind of not really paying attention to what was going on, just kind of letting things happen at the time. But I did go through the anxiety and the depression and everything. In fact, I had a time where I had such anxiety. It was so bad that I would wake up in the morning and would just horrible, horrible anxieties that would last all day, you know, and I would think that I wanted to just kill myself. I didn't want to be like this. But I think what was going on was I was purging all the anxieties that I'd had in my life. It was actually a kind of a purging that all of it came to surface for me to clear out and get rid of. But it is a process. Life is a process. Everything we do is a process. Life, you know, we're born as an infant, we become a child, we become an adolescent, you know, we become a teenager, we become a young adult, we become an old. You know, it's a process. Everything has a process. Plant that grows, you know, it starts from a seed. Everything has a process. So the process of having some kind of a life-altering experience and having to go through it is, you know, you know, you just have to go through it.
And would you say you're at the acceptance phase now?
Oh yes. I mean, oh yeah, I am. I mean, I've been there. I will still say that I get upset at sometimes. Like I said, I didn't say it, but you, the process itself, you know, there is an order to it, just a basic order. I think it's acceptance. No. Denial, depression, bargain. You bargain with God. Why did this happen to me? Can you please change it? Can I go back to the way I was? You know, and then you finally realize they're just not going to do it. It's not going to happen. And then you finally accept it. And you just accept it and you move on in your life and you just adapt to the new life or whatever, or recover or whatever, fully recover and everything. I have accepted the way I am. And, but I do believe that, and that's a big thing, is that I really believe that I am going to fully heal. But it's not going to be on my timing, that it will be on divine timing. So, and again, I have to try to let go of my wanting to control everything and say, okay, I'm going to be better by such and such. Because that ain't going to happen. It's just not going to happen. It's not going to happen in my time. And I can't force it. I just have to surrender again and let go and let God and just, you know, go with the flow. I have a mantra that I go by, and that is, I am on a magic carpet ride with spirit at the helm. I mean, there's a lot of bumps in the road. Of course, I didn't expect a stroke, and that was my big bump. But I'm just going to go along for the ride, and I know that I've got the universe at my back, helping me, supporting me, and guiding me. And I really believe that because of that, I will recover completely. And I think that anybody can recover from something if they really, really, really believe.
And actually, you mentioned about the surviving and thriving. So is it possible to almost bounce back even better?
I think so. Yes, I do. I know that there are circumstances where people, I mean, they face the angel of death, and there's just, that's part of their, to me, karma. I hate to say that, you know, because how can you say, how did I bring this up onto myself? Well, I believe that everybody brings everything into their life, even their own death, even their own illnesses and everything. But even in that kind of situation, you can still thrive in the life that you have by just living it to the fullest and living in the moment and enjoying every moment of the life, of your life, and that you can, you know, you can survive and thrive in any kind of way, in any circumstance at all. It depends on your attitude about life itself.
Well, actually, I suppose you can go on the other side, can't you? You might bring these negatives on yourself, but you can also bring miracles into your life. And I love the idea that you talk about, of having a miracle jar.
Yes, I do think that miracles. Well, again, I really think that the only way that you're going to have a miracle is when you really, really believe, really have faith. Yeah, I in my book, I do quote Joel Osteen. I don't know if he's known at all in the overseas, but in the United States, he's very well known as a minister. In fact, his church is here in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
And his mother was diagnosed with terminal cancer in the 80s. I think it was 81 or whatever. And she's still alive today because of the faith that they had, she used to visualize that she was well. And because of that profound, profound faith that she had, she's alive today, and she's very healthy.
Oh.
So, and how many years ago was that? I mean, years. And then the other story is, again, it was a Joel Osteen story. One of his parishioners was diagnosed with a stroke, and 2 years, the doctors, they just didn't think anything was going to be able to help him. 2 years, he was in a wheelchair, and all of a sudden, one day, he was able to, his body started moving, and today, now, he's walking. You'd never know that he even had a stroke. So really, I believe it has everything to do with the power of the faith of our higher power.
Oh, that's a phenomenal thought. Thank you for sharing that. So, well, actually, you know, you've done some amazing things. You know, you've done that run, you've written a book, and I hear you've actually got Teddy Summit coming up as well shortly.
Yes, I do. It's November 12th to the 14th. And what's really, really exciting to me, we've got some really phenomenal guest panelists. But the one panelist that I'm so excited to have with us is Dr. Bernie Siegel, who is a renowned physician that has worked, most of his work has been with cancer patients, and he's got many books of miracles and healing and everything, because that he's also a spiritual healer, but that he endorsed my book, and that he's actually going to be on my telesummit to me. That was just incredible.
Well, that's like a mini miracle, isn't it, that you've...
Well, it is. When he told me he was going to be on my show, you know, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe this. I even had Kevin Sorbo, who is Hercules of our TV series over here.
Oh, yeah.
He endorsed my book, and I was just so shocked that he would do that. But he's a stroke survivor also, so he understood very much about what I went through. And he wrote his own book called True Strength, which makes perfect sense, because he was Hercules. He had the series, you know, in fact, he had a stroke. He had a stroke while he was doing the series, and he even continued doing the series while he was recovering from his stroke. They just, of course, they did more shots from the different kind of shots, and so they didn't see him really doing as much physical stuff as Hercules in this movie. And that's all in his book. It's a wonderful book. It's a really nice book.
He's going to be on the Tele Summit as well?
No, not Kevin Sorbo, just Bernie Siegel. But he's got a wonderful book called The Art. His most recent book is called The Art of Healing, and it's a really, really good book. I mean, anybody that is going through anything, that's also a really wonderful book to buy, because he's got his work is phenomenal. Really is phenomenal.
Wonderful. Well, I think your work's phenomenal, and I think that what you've done in so little time, one in terms of marshalling your own recovery, but also then sharing these stories and getting kind of a movement going to this heart-centric world is so phenomenal. And I think I'd love to have you back on this show in a year or two's time to see what you've achieved in...
See how much I've done.
For sure. So where can people find you? Where could people find the book? How can they book onto the Tele Summit?
Well, if you go to my website, Radiant Survivor, RADIANT Survivor, that's my blog website. And then there, if you look at the menu items, there's a menu item for both to receive a reminder, not only to buy the book, because you'll get a lot of gifts if you buy the book on launch date, November 19th, but also you can also sign up for the Telesummit. There's a menu item saying, I think it's just to Telesummit November 12th through the 13th. So just click on that, and it'll take you to a page where you can sign up for a reminder of the Telesummit, free tickets to the Telesummit. It is all free.
Fantastic. Well, listen, there's a couple of things. I'm not going to let you go before I ask you a couple of things. First is, if you talk about the lessons and the pearls of wisdom, and I wonder whether you can just summarize your lessons from this episode and some pearls, maybe share some pearls of wisdom.
Well, to me, it's like you never give up. Never, ever give up at all. You keep trying and trying and trying and trying. I know that the times are hard sometimes. There are times when I've just wanted to give up completely. But if you give up, that means you don't really love yourself. It means you don't really want to live. And I think that if you really love yourself, that you'll want to continue going. So never give up is one of them. One of them is believing in yourself, believing in who you are and what you can become, believing in, again, the higher powers. It's just all about belief, too. And if you have that belief, again, miracle can really happen in your life. One of the big, big lessons for me is what's really, really important in life. I found out that my outer reality was not what's important to me, how I looked, recognition, the material things I had in life. To me, what was important to me were relationships with myself, with other people, with my connection with God. Those are the things that are really, really important. Those are the big things that I think. And also establishing a support system. When you have something dramatic happen to you, find your support system. Mine was my mom. I'm living with her. I've lived with her since I had my stroke. But, I mean, you find some kind of support system. If you don't have family, I'll tell you, What I had was I found out who my friends were when I had my stroke. My so-called best friend, she abandoned me. But I have other friends that come and see me all the time or talk to me or call me or whatever. But if you don't have that kind of support system, find out locally what you can find, you know, because there are support systems all over. And I'm sure there's something around you. So those are a lot of the lessons that I've learned so far, you know. And we all learn lessons through life. You just have to keep your eyes and ears and hearts open to anything, any messages that you get throughout life.
That's wonderful. And will you share with us, Erica, the poem at the end of the book? Would you mind reading that for us?
Sure. This poem that I wrote was actually kind of, it was like a summary of everything that I wrote in my book. So I'll read it now. Speeding along on the treadmill of life, fell victim to illness and associated strife. But spirit then said it was a gift of the soul, of what you will learn from a shift in your goals. Your life will be changed as you open your heart to the source of creation from which you're never apart. As you create your new life, you will come to believe that whatever you do, you will always achieve. Never ever give up as you strive to recover. Believe in yourself, and you will discover that with gracious acceptance and surrender to the divine, through your treasure from heaven, you're a twinkle in God's eye. Your situation is not who you are. Changing your limiting beliefs and rise up like a star. Miracles do happen. You can shine and thrive as you lift yourself up as a radiant survivor.
Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that, Erica, and thank you for sharing your story with the world. And as your story is about movement to this more heart-centric world, one of the things we do on the Zone Show is we always finish with meditation or a visualization. And before I spoke to you, I looked into my library of visualizations, and I found the most perfect one. It's all about activating our heart rate and basically our nerve ganglia in our bodies, in our guts, in our chakra points have become very inactive as our consciousness has really risen over the last 10 or 50,000 years. And this visualization allows us to reactivate our heart center so we can send healing and unconditional love to anyone, anywhere in the world, past, present, future. So I'm beaming my heart center right at you right now, Erica. And with your permission, I'll beam you some healing too. And we'll close the show with the heart rate activation.
Thank you very much.
You're a very special and wonderful lady, Erica.
Well, thank you, Thomas. Very sweet of you.
Now become aware of your breathing and really fill your lungs as if the breath is coming from below your diaphragm. And on the in-breath, fill them to 2 or 3 times your normal capacity. And on the out-breath, really exhale. And on the in-breath, breathe in through your nose. And on the out-breath, open your mouth slightly. You can do this visualization lying down or sitting up. If you're sitting up, make sure your feet are on the floor and your arms aren't crossed and they're down by your side or on your lap. You can close your eyes gently and now become aware of your thoughts. Just imagine those that you love. Imagine the things you like doing. Imagine the things you love doing. Imagine what it would be like to live in a world of unconditional love. Imagine what it would be like to do a job you'd love to do, of your clients finding you, and there just being enough work to do of the right type, the right enjoyment.
And it's said, when you love the work that you do, you'll never work again. Now put your tongue to the roof of your mouth and just imagine a point about an inch up and 2 inches back. It's at the top of your spinal column and it's your pineal gland, the cave of the original spirit. And let your thoughts wander from the front of your brain into the center. And from there, just become an observer of your thoughts for a few seconds and let your tongue relax. Now on each in-breath, imagine there's a tube of light which starts in your coccyx and goes all the way up the inside of your spine, through your throat, into the base of your brain, and all the way through up to the crown, the top of your head. And on the in-breath, imagine the light is flowing from the base of your spine all the way up past your heart, into your brain. And on each in-breath, it gets brighter and brighter. And now let your consciousness float down this column on the next out-breath, past your throat, and imagine it sitting just behind your sternum in your heart center. Now imagine flowing from your heart center in both directions, but at right angles to your body, is a vortex. And this vortex is known as your heart ray. Now take the image of elixir, unconditional love, from your mind's eye and allow it now to float down that tube from your pineal gland, past your throat, into your heart center. And turn it on its side and gently let it float out through the front of your body and allow it to rest at the end of the vortex. Maybe it's just a few inches away, maybe a few feet away. And allow it to spin gently with the natural flow of your heart rate. And now on each out-breath, just imagine that the breath gives that vortex a kick. It spins your heart rate. And each time you breathe out, it spins faster and faster and stronger and brighter. Now this ray has been something we've had within us all our lives, but it's been hidden from many of us and suppressed. And one of the reasons for its suppression is it's so powerful. And with it, you can send unconditional love to anyone, anywhere on the planet, at any time, both in the present and in the past and in the future. So let's just play with your heart rate now. It's very gentle in its nature. It's very loving by its nature. And let it spin now. And imagine on each out-breath, it goes out further and further. And it touches the heart rays of all the people that you love, both past, present, and those in the future who you are yet to love. and unconsciously, all those people that you reached out to touch with your heart ray have had a magic dose of unconditional love, of elixir. Now on each in-breath, imagine the heart ray spins back into your chest and takes a little bit of unconditional love from all those you sent it to back into your body. And notice now how on the out-breath you can send out unconditional love, and on the in-breath you can absorb it. And your heart ray is that channel, that conduit, sending love out to the heart rays of all of the beings that you choose. But the heart ray is very flexible. It can be pointed downwards and upwards. And now imagine it turning through 90 degrees and pointing down through the base of your spine into the earth. And send unconditional love to Lady Gaia, to Mother Earth, for giving you grounding, for holding the air that you breathe, for giving you the warmth to keep you alive, and to grow the food that you eat. Now turn it the other way, so it goes up through your throat, through your pineal gland, and out through your crown, into the super consciousness. And send love out to your guides, your guardian angels, and to the source. And know now that you are an expression of unconditional love, incarnated in your heart center. Your heart ray is the pivot point from which it emanates and which it receives. And like all muscles, your heart ray becomes stronger and more effective the more times it's used. You can use it as you wake up in the morning. You can use it as you go to sleep at night. You can use it in business meetings. You can use it at family functions. And you can send love out to future events and situations so that by the time you get there, that love is already in the air. You've been listening to The Zone Show. So there's someone that you love that's either suffering from a dis-ease or somebody that's caring for somebody that's suffering. Do them a great favour and point them at the show and get Erica's book at www.radiantsurvivor.com. I've been Tom Evans. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next week on The Zone Show.